Jason Klom, and this is the Comedy on Vinyl podcast.
The year is 1992. The album is Off the Deep End. The artist is Weird Al Yankovic, and my guest is Craig Rowan. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So, you squeaked it. You squeaked it. I've been very picky about vinyl. And this is like, this is at a bad time for vinyl, but they released it on vinyl in the Netherlands, so...
That counts.
Yeah, absolutely counts.
And I had it on a cassette, the vinyl of cassettes.
Yeah, right. It's absolutely true. So he followed up the UHF with this. Are you a fan of UHF?
I love UHF, Stanley Spadowski, and the whole gang. I was a big fan of that film.
Yeah, which was an unfortunate flop, which makes no sense because it actually made money.
Yeah.
Made good money. Well, good
money. All money is good money.
Exactly right. $1 million extra over the budget is not bad money.
For Weird Al, I mean, come on. It's Thomas the Tank Engine of movies. You know? It's like the little movie that could.
Exactly right. And it's wonderful. And the next album is, I mean, it's critical pop culturally because he's parodying Nirvana on the cover and in the friggin' album. I mean, it's just like, this is like a huge time for pop culture to just come together and just have sex.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
There was a lot of sex happening in 92. And this album was, I think, one of the, I was 8 when it came out. Mm-hmm. And I think it was one of the first singles that I got was Smells Like Nirvana. And then we also got, I think we had the album on tape and maybe on CD as well later.
Yeah.
But it's just like the perfect time for 91, 92. Like Terminator 2 came out.
It
was a big, it was a good year and a half for me.
Yeah. So at 8, my guess is you're probably not a Nirvana fan.
Well, actually, my brother, who's 4 years older than me, was really into Nirvana.
Sure. Perfect age.
So I was listening to it. Like it was, my brother was in the room next to me. So it filtered into me, so even though maybe I wasn't a discerning, you know, I couldn't like choose to, but that, like, Nirvana, Metallica, and then like the hair bands, you know, like a couple years earlier, like Poison and Guns N' Roses, Use Your Illusion, like, even though I was a little young, those were definitely, I was listening to those.
Yeah. So what's your first memory of this album? Is it just hearing Smells Like Nirvana, or seeing it maybe on TV?
Well, I remember buying the cassette. That's the first thing I remember was my grandpa, we'd go visit him. He, you know, lived like an hour from us, but he'd like take us to Sam Goody, and I remember buying it. So that's like the first thing I remember of that. The album cover was, you know, just hilarious. And that video was amazing. And then I have a very specific memory of, maybe it was like a year later, but Polka Your Eyes Out was one of his Weird Al's best polkas. And I remember performing that at summer camp as like a lip sync thing with my bunk.
Awesome.
So that was, it's a lot of like just really good childhood memories.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
I couldn't get a detail, and again, I didn't get to listen. I've heard it a million times.
Sure.
But the polkas don't always stick out until I start hearing them. So what's on that polka?
So I was just refreshing my memory, but it starts with Billy Idol. Rock the Cradle of Love, Rock the Cradle of Love, Don't Rock Easy Issue. It's like
right.
That.
Yeah, okay.
It has Losing My Religion in it. It has I Touch Myself. It has Ice Ice Baby is the very end, and the part that I sang was I think Feed My Frankenstein was my like singular oh my god, I'm gonna feel so bad if it wasn't that. It's something with Frankenstein.
Okay. Fuck. Yeah, see, that's the thing. The second you started, I'm like, oh yeah, fuck, of course I know.
Yeah, exactly.
Had you been a fan of Weird Al before then, as an 8-year-old?
You know, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't remember specifically, but I remember, I didn't have even worse, I think this was the first album that I think we owned by him, but I had obviously heard, you know, his stuff, and I think I had probably seen UHF on VHS by then, because we would rent that a lot, and then also, he used to have, like, LTV on MTV, where he sort of take over. So I assume he did that around that time. So I'd sort of, like, eat up anything. And then I think I wonder if it was during this era, but we did see him live when I was probably 8 or 9.
That's so good.
Yeah.
That's the perfect age to see him live for the first time.
Yeah,
I had to wait till I was fucking 20 to see
him live. Oh my God. What album was that?
Yeah. That was Running With Scissors.
Okay.
So it was a good time, and it was a great fucking show.
Yeah, but he put on a good show.
It makes me think, too. Like, actually, I'm wondering, in looking through this, there are a couple tracks, and we'll go through all the tracks that are on here.
Great.
But there are a couple that did not make it on here that, you know, are kind of... I feel like... I don't know if he... I know he plays some that he never got approved in concert.
Right.
You know, he does that. I'm waiting to see what happens next month when I go see him live for the first time again in 15 fucking years. But... So he's got two songs. I don't know if he ever finished them, so I don't know if you've ever heard them.
Chicken Pot Pie, I know you're getting there.
Of course,
there, but
that's one of them.
He played that live and
he did.
I saw him. And my brother and I, so Guns N' Roses huge.
Mm-hmm.
And that was they covered Live and Let Die by Wings.
Mm-hmm.
And when we saw him live, I remember that was a song that I like legitimately liked. Mm-hmm. I remember liking it as a kid, Live and Let Die.
Mm-hmm.
So when he played it with Chicken Pot Pie, we like went crazy for it. And we assumed, because he didn't say anything and we knew it wasn't on this album, we were like, oh, it's going to be on the next
album. One, right.
So we were like pumped. I was very excited. And then it wasn't on there. And then I had heard this story that Paul McCartney wouldn't allow it on because he's a vegetarian.
Yeah.
And then I met Weird Al years later.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew the story, but I sort of like explained, I was like, I saw you when I was a kid and Chicken Pot Pie, we loved it and were so upset. And then he confirmed the story to me.
Mm-hmm.
That Paul McCartney wasn't into the because he's a vegetarian or
sure.
a vegan.
Right.
Which is a little strange to me because it's like Chicken Pot Pie still exists.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely right. It's not like, he also... There's also one of my favorite Weird Al songs of all time is on this album, and it's satire. A lot of it's what we would call satire. So it is funny that, you know, Paul's got a sense of humor. He's got to, but it's a little weird.
Come on, Paul. If you're listening to this.
Yeah, Paul.
Everybody in America wants to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get it out there somehow. Let's get this. Let Weird be himself.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And there's also Snack All Night, which did not make it on here, which was Black or White. And I don't know if he ever did it.
I think I may have heard clips either from like live stuff or something,
uh-huh.
but I guess that was Michael Jackson deemed that song too important to be, but man, that would have been so great too, because that's like the perfect music video to parody as well.
Absolutely.
Black or White was like one of the most groundbreaking music
mm-hmm.
videos ever. So.
I mean, he could have stood on top of a fucking vending machine and busted that open instead of a car.
Yes.
Fuck, let's make this video now.
Oh my God, and he'd use like racist epithets that were like food related instead of like actual racist words in the extended version that they only air once.
I really wish I wasn't running through possibilities in my head when you say that. Like, that makes me feel like a very bad person.
Uh-huh.
Okay, let's start with Smells Like Nirvana.
Right.
It's a perfect sound alike.
Oh my God! It's, you know, I was listening to it before. I was like, "Is it a little? I don't know if it's a little fast
it
or something.
Be,
yeah. Maybe, but it's so great. Come on, guys! It's a perfect song.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's also, you know, such a great song to parody.
Yeah.
And it's also one of the songs that Weird Al, I think he does it. It's not like his. I don't know if it's like a big thing for him, but he comments on the musician. Like it's about how.
Right.
You can't understand. I know he did that with like Lady Gaga more recently. With,
sure.
Born This Way?
Mm-hmm.
What was it?
Perform This Way. Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of a little bit weird in that way that it's commenting on them, but I love it.
That's the only reason it got made, though, apparently. Like, that Kurt was down that it wasn't about food, which is...
Yeah.
And I guess, from what I understand, in Kurt's, like, some recent diaries they published,
mm-hmm.
like, some of the notes that made it in there were being excited about Weird Al and how Weird Al's a fucking genius.
Most of his journals were about Weird Al.
See, that's what they should be.
And that was, you know, they don't want you to see the full, I don't mean to get serious, but suicide note, but a lot of it is about... You know, like, why didn't he do anything off of In Utero or, you know, all that stuff. So, he was pretty excited, but then let down by Weird Al.
The next song on the album is one of my top 10 of all time Weird Al songs, and that's Trigger Happy. Beach Boys, Janet Dean style.
So good.
All about, quote-unquote, gun rights.
Trigger Happy. Got an AK-47, well, you know it makes me feel all right. Got an Uzi by my pillow, helps me sleep a little better at night. There's no feeling any greater than to shoot first and ask questions later. Now I'm trigger happy every day. Well, you can't take my guns away, I got a constitutional right. Yeah, I gotta be ready if the commies attack us tonight. I'll blow their brains out with my Smith & Wesson. That oughta teach them all a darn good lesson. Now I'm trigger happy every day.
Oh yeah, I'm
trigger happy, yes I'm trigger happy. Trigger happy.
Yeah, and this is one where I, first of all, like, I think a lot, some of his originals aren't as memorable. This one, I mean, I also grew up listening to, you know, like, Beach Boys, mm-hmm. and Jen and Dean, Beatles, all that stuff, sure, my parents. But this one, like, huge amounts of the lyrics have stuck in my head. Like, I listened to it earlier today, and I remember most of them, mm-hmm. which is, I think, says a lot about how great the song is.
Yeah.
You can't take my guns away, I got a constitutional right. And it's, listen, he's like, it's still an issue today.
Uh-huh. And at the chorus in the background is shoot to kill now. It makes me so fucking happy.
It is. I mean, it, and this to me is like, I don't know, some people, you know, think, I love Weird Al. Some people I think aren't as into him, but this is like, it's such a great, like, the tone of it is so, like, bright and happy, mm-hmm. and then the message is so dark that I think it's sort of just his brilliance there.
Exactly right. It's one of the things that he's underappreciated for, and it's one of those pieces of evidence that I like to keep in my back pocket if anybody's like, well, you know, he's just a novelty artist. No, fuck you. No, absolutely wrong.
Yeah, no.
Pay attention.
He's not, nothing's novel about gun rights.
Yeah, right. And in between shit about fucking food and TV, which, by the way, in and of itself, making that many food and TV songs is a comment in and of itself. Between that shit, you're going to find stuff like Trigger Happy, which is pretty perfect.
It's brilliant. And he had enough food songs that we had his food album, which was like a greatest hits of food, but which is just so great that it's also just called the food album. Mm-hmm. It's, to me, so funny.
I don't want to say off the top of my head because I could be totally wrong. I don't know if that's his first compilation or not. It was the next album after this.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, so they released that right
after.
That
was right in the sweet. I feel like everybody has like a Weird Al sweet spot.
Sure.
And I think mine was from this, mm-hmm. Smells Like Nirvana, until Bad Hair Day. And then like Running With Scissors, I thought it was like a little too cool for Weird Al.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but no, I wasn't. And I remember almost having that feeling too, or like, I actually realized the second one, I'm like, I don't know anymore. I realized it's because I stopped being hip to what was new musically.
Right, yes, yeah.
I'm
definitely.
Like, oh, I'm the asshole. Never mind. This old guy's way ahead of me, so I should just pick up.
Yeah, it feels a little weird when you know, like, you know his version and you don't know what the song is.
100%.
Yeah.
Next one's I Can't Watch This.
Speaks for itself.
Mm-hmm.
MC Hammer. And, I mean, I don't know. It must be just because of my age, but, like, those, like, that song was, I mean, I guess, it was just so huge. Mm-hmm. Like, that, I can't, you can't touch this. And this song wasn't as huge, but I like it.
Right.
I don't know what to say about
No, it's perfect. And it's also this weird melange because, I mean, we're three songs into a Rick James song. Because
right.
It was a Rick James song, then it was MC Hammer, and then now it's a Weird Al song. And obviously I'm going to prefer Weird Al's most of the time.
I'd say, like, he did the third version, but to me this is the original.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, this is the urtext. Is that a mm-hmm. saying? This is the real thing. And Rick James, he might get some money because of the rights.
Sure.
So, same with MC Hammer, but they don't deserve any of it. Weird Al, don't pay them. It's so good.
And it's all about, is it, it's just all about shitty TV, right? Are there
some it's about TV. I was listening to, you know, this is one of the songs that I don't remember all the lyrics from.
Sure.
But I think it's mostly about TV just from that era. I could be mm-hmm. wrong. But again, he's saying there's crap on TV. Nobody said that before Weird Al. Nobody said there's TV is worthless until Weird Al existed.
You've got this weird polarizing thing going on here where you love Weird Al. Yet. Okay. Then Poke Your Eyes Out, which you know very intimately.
So great. I mean, this one was huge for me. Alternative polka was huge for me.
Sure.
This one is great. I mean, and I also like, I think, I don't know if I learned it from Weird Al or from those commercials for like Time Life where they'd sort of like string a number of songs next to each other. But my brain now, and it could be from his polkas, but like when I hear a song, I love making connections and beats and stuff. He does such a great job of bridging songs together. I love this song.
Yeah.
What, do you have a favorite polka?
That's really rough. I'd have to go through them in my head. But you know what?
I think on Alapalooza he did the Bohemian polka.
Which is fantastic. Which is the only time he's done one
just
song.
Just a full cover.
But it's brilliant.
Yeah.
Like, so well put together. And that's in the top. But I think either Alternative Polka or, and I'd need a list of all the polkas in front of me. That might be the one that sticks out the most. Is that the one that's on Bad Hair Day?
Yes, that's the Bad Hair Day.
So, yeah, I think that's the one that probably is the one that's in my head most often.
Yeah, that to me, also, like, I guess maybe I was in middle school at this time, and I was listening to more music, I was watching more MTV, so those songs also, to me, they hit that sweet spot.
Yeah. I had, like, sort of the opposite, like, you were being exposed, because you had an older brother. I did not have an older brother. Like, exposing you to some stuff where you're a little more familiar. You're a little hipper for an 8-year-old kid.
I'm pretty hip.
You know?
I was a little hip.
I was 12 at the time, although it's now striking me your brother was 12 listening to Nirvana, and that's pretty...
He was, yeah, I think he was, like, really sort of on the pulse of what was going on. He always was pretty hip to the good music.
Yeah, no, that's pretty solid. But I forgot what my point was, but either way, you were a hip 8-year-old kid. The next one... I probably really liked at the time because no one likes New Kids on the Block if you're a young man, I don't think. White Stuff.
The White Stuff is obviously the right stuff. And I think I was also, we were 91, 92, big years for me because that's also when I started getting into Mad Magazine.
Awesome.
And we had my dad's old Mads from the 60s, but I remember like 91, 92, that's when we started buying them and then eventually getting subscriptions. Mm-hmm. And they were very hard on New Kids on the Block, which makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And then this too. And I think I know most of the words to this song and I don't know any of the words to the original, the right stuff. So I guess they're easy targets, but somebody needs to hit those easy targets.
Yeah, absolutely right. Was it New Kids on the Block? Please tell me that
they did.
Was.
Yeah, they definitely did New Kids. Well, they had one where they gave stickers that you would like. I think they were either stamps or stickers, like a page of stickers, and they had like New Kids on the Block and stuff like that. And I think one of the maybe this was later, but one of the members of the group, Donnie Wahlberg, he peed on an airplane at some point. And maybe that was a little later, but they did not let him hear the end of that. Mad Magazine really stuck it to him.
It's fucking fantastic. If I'm not mistaken, I saw on your blog you made some of your own Mad covers at the time.
Yes, yeah. That was a little bit later, but it was definitely like Mad Magazine was a huge... And also, again, like, weird, I went to summer camp, and this is topical because of Wet Hot American Summer now.
Sure.
But like Mad Magazine, Weird Al, like, are all, to me, like summer camp, young, like the best, you know. Just laughing at silly stuff.
Yeah, absolutely right. We'll go over some more in a second. But did you make? I have to assume you made friends over comedy if you were going to summer camp and you had all these other kids who knew what Weird Al was.
Yeah, I think. I mean, you know, we did the. I think I'm not going to say that I was the one that pushed it because I could be wrong. But yeah. we lip synced it at what we called MTV Night, where you lip sync songs. And I think we might have done another Weird Al song at some other point. And I would bring the Mad Magazines. And, you know, it wasn't like when you're a kid, you don't think like, oh, I like comedy. You just are drawn to this thing. And I think that's like a really good age to get into that. And I think it was really influential to us, even though we were just, you know, eating it up.
Yeah. It's good to be surrounded by nerds when you're that age.
Yes.
Like, I don't know that I was when I was 8. Like, that would have been really solid to have.
Yeah. Yeah. I went to camp starting at 9, and that's, you know, you missed out on a lot of stuff.
Oh, yeah. Oh, 100%. 100%. I didn't make, like, nerd friends until I was 10, and then that's kind of why I do this podcast.
Right.
Weird Al's partially responsible for my best friend.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
How's
like,
that?
Huh? Like, when I was 10, I met my best friend, Dan. This is 25 years ago. I knew Weird Al plenty. Like, I listened mm-hmm. to Weird Al, but, like, he made me sit down and we listened to In 3D. We listened to maybe the first Weird Al album, but we would listen to him on a fucking loop. We'd flip the tape.
Nice.
And that and Cheech and Chong, out of all things, were the two things we became best friends over.
That's awesome.
I finally got to tell Weird Al that a couple years ago, and he was just so gracious. Like, I only had 5 seconds with him, but the nicest man.
Yeah, that's what sort of, when I told him that he was my... Oh, not only did we see Weird Al, it was my first concert, but he was also... Like, super excited about that. You know, like, yeah. He was very cool about it. And so I very much respect him. Like, he's, you know, some people hate their fans. Weird Al loves his fans.
I know.
And the white stuff also, come on, Oreos? That's great.
It's fantastic.
Oreos are so good. And he...
They are delicious.
He stuck it to them.
And then there's When I Was Your Age.
That one is one that I remember. It's sort of like when I was your age. It's like, you know, the old person saying we used to walk uphill both ways, but then mm-hmm. it sort of like heightens that to an insane degree. I forget. What does it say? Is it based on?
All it says is an original, but I wish they would list the style pairs.
They usually do. I don't know. And that's a funny thing, too, is like, you know, when Wikipedia came out, or the first time I started looking up Weird Al, mm-hmm. which I you know, sometimes it happens.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize that a lot of his originals were like pastiches or whatever.
Me neither. Not at all. Yeah.
Like, obviously, something like Trigger Happy is obvious, but other ones I was like, oh, that's so cool. That's Devo or whatever, mm-hmm. you know.
This website says it's a Don Henley style parody. So, if Dirt Were Dollars or Dirty Laundry are the two songs it's commenting on.
I believe that.
Sounds right.
I don't know. I can't say. They're right or wrong, but sure. I'll believe that.
It's a very specific style parody, yeah. Don Henley.
Yeah.
Of all people. Yeah. Like, that's pretty funny. Let's see, not even Eagles, but just Don Henley. Then we got, this is the stupidest fucking song.
I love this song.
It's great, though. It's perfect. Taco Grande.
This is so great. And also, I'm going to say, ahead of its time also.
Uh-huh.
Mexican food now, maybe in L.A., where Weird Al lives,
sure,
it was
sure,
always
sure.
big. But mm-hmm. as an East Coaster, I hadn't heard of most of these types of food.
100%. Yeah.
I just got to have a tostada, carne asada, that's right, I want the whole enchilada, or whatever. Mm-hmm. Those lyrics were so memorable to me. And so I had never eaten a burrito until Weird Al. That's not true, but...
sort of feels that way, though.
And also, it's like, I don't know if I would have remembered Rico Suave in general if it wasn't for this. That was a big song, though.
Yeah, huge. And what I love is it's before Weird Al, it's written by 1, 2, 3, 4 people before Weird Al. I love that it's all told with this song, 5 people wrote this song.
And one of their last names is Soy.
Is Soy. I also thought that was kind of
which
funny.
Is a food.
It is a food.
But you remember that one too.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I love that song. And it legitimately makes me hungry.
Yeah, it's just so good. We'll get Mexican afterwards.
Okay, sounds good. Next one is, okay, so let's see. All right, so it says, inspired by the songs of Nick Lowe and Jonathan Richman. Consider that above my head.
So my wife is a fan of Jonathan Richman.
Okay.
But I did not remember the song at all.
Okay.
0%.
This one I do know.
I didn't remember this.
Okay.
And listening to it, to me, I'm sorry, Weird Al, it's just, maybe it's just that I don't know the original artist as much, but mm-hmm. It just didn't jump out at me when I was just listening to it.
Yeah.
But again, you know, You remember it, though.
I do. Airline Amy. I forgot to say the name of it. But yeah, he's just talking about how he's in love with a stewardess. That's pretty much... Oh, am I allowed to say stewardess? You know.
Steward. Female steward.
Female steward. Thank you very much.
And, but then I was reading the lyrics and I was like, this... It's not, to me...
Is it stalkery?
It's not even... I guess it is if you're going on this person's flights, but...
Yeah.
It didn't... Again, I'm sorry. I love Weird Al.
It's not Melanie.
I don't want to talk crap about it, but...
It's not Melanie, which is one of the great stalker songs of all time.
Yeah, no Melanie.
Absolutely. Holy shit, fantastic. Which I don't remember.
He does have some stalkery... I mean, he has a lot of love songs, and there are a couple of love songs in this one, too.
Mm-hmm. The next one...
Oh, wait, did we skip,
Did we? What? Oh, we skipped I Was Only Kidding.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm an ass. Yeah. It's a style parody of Tony O'Kay, who I don't know who that is.
Well, I didn't know who that was either, but I remember this song. This was sort of like how he was in love, and then everything he said, he was just kidding.
Mm-hmm. So stupid. Like, it's the most childish punchline, too, to the whole thing.
And I think this was, like, around the time of, like, when... You know, Wayne's World, like, Not was really big, like, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that was, like, a popular type of humor was, like, no, not, I'm kidding. Mm-hmm. Like, that's, I don't know why, but that was, like, very, very in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was reading, the reason that even made it onto this album is because he's afraid it wouldn't be timely if they waited to release it on another album, so he switched it out for another one. It was, like, specifically the Knot reference. Which is funny, because lame people have still been using that to this day.
I used to have a t-shirt that said, and in first grade, so it was obviously Wayne's World, but it was a white sweatshirt with turquoise lettering, and it said, Knot, ... So they messed up. It should have been ... Knot. But they put the ellipsis on the wrong side, so.
That's brilliant.
Nobody ever pointed it out to me, but they should have.
The next song would be the plumbing song, which I recall loosely. I know that it's a Milli Vanilli thing.
Yeah, this one also didn't... I don't remember it as well. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe it was because... And I could be honest. I was younger, and these songs are later in the album, and I think when you're younger, sometimes you don't... You know, the hits are up top.
Sure.
But this one, obviously, Blame It on the Rain and Milli Vanilli were... so huge that I'm sure I listened to it.
Mm-hmm. The next one I actually really love, and that's You Don't Love Me
Anymore. Oh, yeah. That was a single.
Mm-hmm. Apparently a lot of people thought it was a parody of the video.
More Than Words?
Yeah, thank you, More Than Words, which is why he made the video look like More Than Words.
Yeah, I read that, but I don't see the connection in song.
Other than it just being an acoustic,
pretty
sounding song, that was it. People made that mistake, so he just went with it, I guess.
This one to me, like, this reminds, I like, on Bad Hair Day, what's the song, Since You've Been Gone. These types of songs are like the sort of violent love songs are so good.
Again, the dark side, but again, coming out in this like seemingly harmless way.
Yeah, he's...
And a kid can listen to it. All they're doing is getting laughs out of it. But
yeah.
If you're an adult who's gone through relationships, suddenly it starts to feel different.
Right. Yeah. And I guess like similarly like Christmas at Ground Zero, which is, I guess now sounds even worse than...
Oh, yeah. Good call.
But I think that was on Bad Hair Day, too, but super dark.
Yeah.
Mixing light and dark, Weird Al.
I fucking love
the
that
yin
song.
And the yang. They should call him Weird Al Ying and the Yangovic.
Ooh. We should tweet
that. It, guys. If please. You want to tweet, use the hashtag Weird Al Ying and Yangovic.
Let's see if it'll
CC
fit.
Me on that.
Have you heard the super violent version of the Santa song? The Night Santa Went Crazy?
Oh, the Night Santa, yes.
Yeah. I think the only difference is, yes, Virginia, that's his brain. That's his brain's on the floor.
Oh, wait, you're saying there are two
versions of it.
Okay.
Yes.
No, I didn't know that.
The one that does not make it onto the album, it might be on the single. I have the single, so maybe it's on the single, but it's just, yes, Virginia, that's his brain's on the floor. Guess they won't have the old guy to kick around anymore.
Wow.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
But, I mean, that whole song was super violent. I mean, that was really violent no matter what. So awesome.
And the last song, which since I didn't own this one at the time, I owned other ones. I did not own this. The last one's like a hidden track.
Right.
Called Bite Me.
I also didn't know about this one either.
Need to hear it.
Maybe I had listened to it.
You did, okay.
It's on YouTube. It took me a little while to find.
Really?
But it's, no, if you just look up Weird Al Bite Me, it'll pop up. I was trying to be too smart about it. And, but I don't remember this. Maybe it was because we had it on cassette, or maybe we just weren't smart enough to keep it playing.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess it's also a Nirvana parody.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Because it's also, there was a similar-ish hidden track on one of their fucking albums. Same album? Never mind.
Yes. Okay. And, this is just a really loud, really short song. Mm-hmm. But very enjoyable.
Jesus Christ, sorry.
No, no worries. Do you want me to pour some water of mine?
No, I'm good. Thank you. I'll just drink five of those fucking Red Bulls. Yeah. For the listener, there are five Red Bulls in this room. This is not where we normally record. I don't know whose they are. I'm kind of afraid to touch them.
I think if you drank them, nobody would care.
I know, but they're also, I mean, well, I guess they're not warm. They're not warm.
Drink.
Don't fucking kill me. So do you have a favorite track on this whole album? Maybe you already said it, but...
I guess I'd go with Trigger Happy, just so catchy, and then Poke Your Eyes Out. And, I mean, maybe those are, you know, maybe I'm just too mainstream, but those are really, I think, those are, to me, the obvious ones. I mean, of course, Smells Like Nirvana, too, but if I just said that, I'd be, a loser.
Yeah, right. What about you? Trigger Happy, honestly,
yeah.
And, like, I feel like anything that isn't a parody, that's the fun thing with Weird Al, is you can weed people out. Like, anything that isn't a parody is a deep cut. Instantly,
yes,
because
I know.
Nobody knows.
It's totally true.
Yeah, so if you can talk about that, and it's this kind of code for, like, yeah, people bring their parents to this guy's shit, but, like,
it's like, listen, do you know Frank's 2000-inch TV? Because if you don't, get out of the conversation.
When I said that I'd be faithful, when I promised I'd be true, when I swore that I could never be with anyone but you, when I told you that I loved you with those tender words I spoke, I was only kidding. Now can't you take a joke? When I said that I can't live without you, when I said I'd follow you anywhere, when I said you could always trust me, when I said I'd never leave you flat, well guess what, I was only kidding, baby, I can't believe you fell for that, you're so gullible.
I was only kidding.
You thought that was for real?
I was only kidding.
Now I'm sorry if you misunderstood, but the fact remains.
Let's talk a little bit about, like, his influence on you. I mean, have you ever done your own comedy music? I mean, I know you're a comedy writer, but...
Right. Actually, sort of. I mean, in college, I was in an improv group, and my friend Rory Panagatopoulos and I, who we still do comedy stuff occasionally, together would write silly songs. Mm-hmm. And at summer camp, we'd write parodies, and we had, like, you know, Camp Olympics, and you'd write, like, your team's, like, song, and you'd write it basically like a camp parody about stuff. And I still love making up my own lyrics to songs. Like, if I know the chorus of a song, I'll fill in the rest. And I love singing, even though I'm not a very musical person.
Sure.
So I'd say more in my personal life but actually, I don't know if I should say this, but, I write for this show called Night of Too Many Stars on Comedy Central, which is a show that Robert Smigel puts together. And Weird Al did it this time, and he performed with a young autistic girl. They sang Yoda, which was amazing.
Awesome.
But we were pitching him Weird Al songs, and he, like, gave notes on them, and, like, we started writing a song for Weird Al, and it was so good. It was so much fun. Smigel and I started writing a song that was Sia's Chandelier, and it was called Mr. Belvedere. it was honestly one of the best. I don't know how I didn't immediately of this, but, like, it was so much fun to write, like, and we wrote a lot of parodies, the concepts and just pitching him ideas, and he was into some of them. Like, it was really fun.
Holy fuck, man.
Yeah, it was a really good time. So none of them were performed by him because he ended up just doing this amazing Yoda performance. But that was a real highlight experience of my comedy writing. Yeah.
Holy shit, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, I also think like the whole concept of the parody and the mental process that's behind it, especially if you're used to thinking that way. I think it's a comedic brain thing where you are trying to find, well, there's this thing that exists, but how can I shit on it, but how can I twist? I mean, it's just a simple, how can I twist this thing familiar?
Yeah.
So probably invariably, you probably learned how to do that from listening to enough Weird Al. I feel like, you know what I mean? I could be wrong.
No, I think I do think Weird Al and Mad Magazine, and Mad Magazine used to have those song parodies too.
Oh, yep.
They'd just write them out, which mm-hmm. I guess is... They've been doing that since the 60s.
Yeah.
But, those are huge and they're super fun and it's stupid, but I love like puns and silly.
Sure.
And I think like people make, you know, so like, oh, he does food songs and TV. But it's like, yeah, what else would you write about?
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Exactly. What's always fucking there in America.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, man. I had another question for you. And just told
I'm an open book. Let's get deep.
Apparently, no, this is good. So we talked about his influence on you.
Mm-hmm.
As far as comedy albums, did you ever listen to any other ones as a kid? Or was this
the shit
you gravitated to?
Oh, yeah, no. And also, like, my parent, when we were kids, Alan Sherman was, I guess, sort of, like, Alan Sherman and Spike Jonze were my parents, you know, Weird Al.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah.
But we saw... like an Alan Sherman play called Hello Mudda, Hello Fada. There was a play based off of the song Hello Mudda, Hello Fada.
That's interesting.
And I think probably because of that, we bought like the best of Alan Sherman or one of his albums. So I remember listening to that, which is very much in the same vein.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember listening to, I'm trying to think of what like... straight comedy albums. I mean, I remember listening to an Eddie Murphy that had Boogie in Your Butt, that song on it. I forget what that stand-up album was, but all I remember is Boogie in Your Butt.
I think it's the first one. I think it's just Eddie Murphy.
And I think also the first track title, we're not allowed to say anymore, because it's... It's a bad word.
F-word for gay people?
Yeah, F-word for gay people.
Okay, yep,
alright. I'm trying to think of, like, those are the straight comedy albums that I'm sure there are other ones. And if my brother listens to this, he'll say I forgot to mention something. But yeah, those were the big ones for me.
Yeah. But a lot of music. A lot of comedy music. All right. So since we've got a limited time here, I want to, number one, let's condense. Well, if somebody somehow has never heard of Weird Al Yankovic, don't ask me how that's fucking possible. Why would you recommend this album as a starting point?
I think because... and maybe I'm totally biased because of my age. I am biased, but I think that this came out at a really good moment for music. And by good, I don't know if it necessarily just means, like, great music, but Nirvana was happening, Metallica was getting really big, Guns N' Roses was really big, and it was sort of, I feel like maybe, I don't know, this might be hoity-toity, but like a transitional time for music.
Sure.
So I think like Poke Your Eyes Out sort of covers that.
Yeah,
And Smells Like Nirvana. And then it also showcases like the shitty music of America with New Kids on the Block. It's sort of, I think it's like a super... American album. I'm going to say, if you're a patriot, you should listen to this. And if you don't, you're anti-American.
100%.
That's what I'm going to say. That's why. Because if you don't listen to it and you've never heard of Weird Al, you're a treasonous bastard.
I agree.
Can't figure anything.
more than you might think. I'm going to get hoity-toity as well. The pure satire of Trigger Happy is enough to give this motherfucking album a listen.
Yeah.
The rest of it's familiar, and you could probably listen to it and get easy laughs. But Trigger Happy, I mean, don't get me wrong, you probably have to have it. But I don't know. Like, I don't know what his audience is. His audience, other than parents and their kids, like, I don't necessarily think he's got a conservative or liberal audience. I think he's got a very, like, I like comedy.
Yeah,
but he got this past people, like, you know?
Yeah, I think his audience is people who listen to music, like, and it's fun, and it's silly, and it's light, but, yeah, something like Trigger Happy is pretty bold.
Yeah.
Very bold. So.
It's kind of, I mean, just being that subversive, and not... like, angrily subversive. It's just like, this is here.
No, and he hides it as the best people do, with a smile. You know, like, it's just, to me, it's just also, like, that's really satirical and sharp, and then he's also just silly. Like, I feel like if people talk down to Weird Al, and I don't, it's not like people I know have to me, but
sure.
I think some people could see, but it's like, it's fun. Like, isn't that such a great thing that he can be just fun and that he appeals to kids? And it's sort of like opening up the door for kids to, you know, being weird and silly and wearing Hawaiian shirts.
Mm-hmm. 100%. We used to, I will say, I have some old VHS tape of my best friend who looks enough like Weird Al that when we put him in a Hawaiian shirt and this Shirley Temple wig, it was the greatest thing on the planet.
Wow.
We have since, like, we still insist that he is Weird Al's secret love child because they're similar enough.
And I know during the 80s, Weird Al was all about the backstage Bettys.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, he probably left a trail of kids across America.
They're just listening to these albums and crying. They don't know why. It's in their genes. Like,
that nasal voice, it's part of me.
You have some things to promote, I understand, so why don't you tell the folks at home about them?
Well, the big thing to promote, and the only thing I care about, is a show called Your Pretty Face is Going to Hell, which is... the second season of it is airing right now on Adult Swim at 12:15 a.m. on Sunday nights. And it's written by Dave Willis, who co-created... Aqua Teen Hunger Force and Squidbillies.
Uh-huh.
And the other guy who writes and directs it, who co-created with Dave, is Casper Kelly, who created Too Many Cooks, which is sort of maybe one of the best things ever made ever in the history of anything.
So
those guys are the brains behind the show, and it takes place in hell, and we're full body makeup with horns, and we play demons in hell, and it's very fun. Very fun show, and I highly recommend it to everybody.
Where can people find you online?
On the internet, if you go to Pornhub and if you Google school marms, you'll find my handle. No, you can find me at, I'm on Twitter at Craig Rowan, CraigRowin. And that's Twitter. I'm on Instagram with the same name and CraigRowan.com. And you can check out a bunch of Your Pretty Face is Going to Hell episodes on AdultSwim.com too. I really highly recommend the show.
Is it on any other services, or do I need me a cable package?
The first season is on Hulu.
Thought so. Okay.
And I don't want to bite the hand that feeds me, but I think some people pirated online.
Fun.
So if
of course
I'm not part of that. And
sure.
To the people who do that, you're going down. We're going after you. But
100%.
You can find it.
Do you mind if I ask you very quickly about something
that
I found on your website? The million-dollar hoax thing that you pulled off.
Sure.
Okay. It's a gentle hoax, which is what I like about it. There's no victim. But you put out a call for someone to give you $1 million.
Yes.
When did the official reveal happen that you hired or you got an actor to play a millionaire who was going to give you the money?
So I made 3 videos called Please Give Me $1 Million, and I think I started them in the fall. And I made 3... up until like January, I made asking for one person to give me one check for $1 million. And I perform at the UCB Theater in New York, and it sort of got a little bit of traction online. You know, it was up on some blogs and stuff, and people kept asking me about it, and I didn't want to keep making any more of them.
Okay.
but I also didn't want it just to fizzle out, like,
because
web series
of course
can just fizzle. And So I was like, oh, I'll just fulfill what everybody wants and what I want, and I'll make it seem like I got $1 million just for fun, and I'll do a live show at the UCB Theater. So I put up a video in January of whatever year that was, maybe it was 2011, and for I would receive the check live in the beginning of February, and I didn't realize it was, it just blew up into this sort of international news story overnight because the Daily News printed it as truth.
Okay.
And
that's fantastic.
They knocked on my door and said, and in the video where I said I'm getting $1 million from a real millionaire, I held up a notarized letter.
I saw that.
And they said, we want to interview you, but and we'll put it in the paper, but we need to see the notarized letter to make sure it's real. And I said, no, you can't, because I want to keep him anonymous. And they said, then we can't print the story. And I said, all right, don't print the story. And then the next day it was on the third page.
That's
so
fucking fantastic.
So for 2 weeks, people were getting in touch with me about, you know, can I have your money or can I murder you?
And the videos are on your website. They're very funny. And people should go watch those.
Oh, thank you very much.
I want to make sure we wrap this up just very quickly.
Sure.
October 21st, 2015, the Million McFly March happens here in Burbank. Or if you want to do it in your city, do it as well. It is to raise money for Parkinson's and also to celebrate Back to the Future. Come to Burbank, dress like Marty McFly. I'm going to.
Oh, that's great.
A ton of people coming. So that should be fun. And then I think I had another note for one other thing. Actually, I don't know when we're going to release this, but go to adrinkinggame.com. I'm in that every month. This month we're doing Office Space. So thank you guys for listening. Thank you for being here.
Oh, right? Thank you so much for having me. This was a blast.
And I keep slamming the table, and that's going to be real annoying to the people at home. But thank you guys for listening, and as always, have a good thing.
Comedy on Vinyl is a production of Stolen Dress Entertainment. It is produced by Mike Warden and is hosted and edited by Jason Klom. Our theme song was composed and performed by Richard Levinson. Please visit stolendress.com to listen to our other podcasts, read our blogs, read our tweets, watch our videos, and read our books. Please subscribe on iTunes, and if you like us, give us a 5-star rating and a nice review. You can find us on facebook.com/comedyonvinyl, Twitter @comedyonvinyl, and find everything else at comedyonvinyl.com.
Together for so very long, but now things are changing. Oh, I wonder what's wrong. Seems you don't want me around. The passion is gone and the flames died down. I guess I lost a little bit of self-esteem. That time that you made it with the whole hockey team. You used to think I was nice. Now you tell all your friends that I'm the Antichrist. Oh, why did you disconnect the brakes on my car? That kind of thing is hard to ignore. Got a funny feeling. You don't love me.